I thanked the captain and went to look for my two companions, who hadn't yet left their cabin. I invited them to follow me, not telling them where we were. They climbed onto the platform. Conseil, whom nothing could startle, saw it as a perfectly natural thing to fall asleep under the waves and wake up under a mountain. But Ned Land had no idea in his head other than to see if this cavern offered some way out. After breakfast, near 10 o'clock, we went down onto the embankment. "So here we are, back on shore," Conseil said. "I'd hardly call this shore," the Canadian replied, "and besides, we aren't on it, but under it." A sandy beach unfolded before us, measuring 500 feet at its widest point, between the waters of the lake and the foot of the mountain's walls. Via this strand you could easily circle the lake, but the base of these high walls consisted of broken soil, over which there lay picturesque piles of volcanic blocks and enormous pumice stones. All these crumbling masses were covered with an enamel polished by the action of underground fires, and they glistened under the stream of electric light from our beacon. Stirred up by our footsteps, the mica-rich dust on this beach flew into the air like clouds of sparks. The ground rose appreciably as it moved away from the sand flats by the waves, and we soon arrived at some long, winding gradients, genuinely steep paths that allowed us to climb little by little. But we had to tread cautiously in the midst of pudding-stones that weren't cemented together, and our feet kept skidding on glassy traheets made of feldspar and quartz crystals.